You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
John! Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Lost is over, but we have to go back down the hatch. It's the Lost Rewatch Podcast here on Post Show Recaps. I'm Josh Wigler, and the man who just blew out your ears with that introduction is Mike Bloom. Mike, how you doing?
I'm just preparing him for when I blow out their eardrums with just my naturally loud voice. So I think it's more of a preparation, a little bit of foreplay. Hey, Josh, wait, go long.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? This is embarrassing. I'll just get it out of the way. Can't throw a football. Can't catch a football. Very bad around a football. I like to think that maybe one of like the underlying reasons why I don't have a child yet is because of like the inevitability of having to confront that child someday and being like, listen, I know you want to know how to throw a football. I can't do it.
Well, listen, I can't show you. That has not stopped me, Josh, from pursuing my own path down parenthood.
Well, when Asher is ready to go, you better sign up for some lessons. Isn't it a prereq?
I don't know. At that point, I'm assuming that robots will be throwing balls for us back and forth. So just like, come on, son, let's watch the Baltron throw the ball back and forth and comment upon how AI has taken all of our lives by storm.
I love Baltron, and I'll form the head. This cowboy's daddy issues is that his daddy never taught him how to play sports, and so I'm afraid of what would happen if I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, I know that your father recently, Josh, penned you an email about how he thought Lost was a brilliant show. Did he have any comments about the football tossing at the end of Par Avion by chance?
You know what? So the great Dr. Michael Wigler and my mother are both watching Lost right now, and they are actually really close to where we are on the podcast. they're going on a daily pace. I think they're doing like one a day. And so they're in the middle of season three right now. And I did get this email from my dad with the subject line being Lost. And it was like 12:04 a.m.
That's a lost number, at least one of them.
And I was like, all right, here we go. And I open it up and he goes, a brilliant show. That's all it said. to which I replied, I think something along the line, here, I'll find it. I think I replied something along the lines of like, truly the best. Yeah, I said the best of all time is what I said. The best of all time. And then he responded by saying, I think so.
Is he walking back his opinion, or was he thought it was a brilliant show, but there are so many brilliant shows that it might be one of the best of all time.
Yeah, I think I don't know. You know, he's a He's like the smoke monster in many ways. He's just like constantly shifting and shape-shifting.
Oh my God, is your dad Titus Wolliver?
My dad might be Mikhail, according to one of your theories, which I expect we might start getting into today. Mikhail Wigler. But no, it's really fun that my parents are watching Lost right now, and so like that gives us something additional to talk about.
Yeah, this is sort of like I guess we could call it like on the B&B over on the reality TV side of things, we do a casuals corner. I wouldn't call your parents necessarily casual.
Oh, they're Lost casuals. They're Lost casuals.
Yeah, so maybe we could do like a Lost casual check-in. Take the temperature of like, who do they like? Who do they not like at this point?
They're Lost casuals, but I will also say that my mother, at least, is a post-show recaps patron.
What?
Didi,
what's your excuse, people? If
so
Josh's mom
look,
can
if
be
my
one,
mom can be a member of the post-show recaps patron community, then why not you? Why not yourself? Go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We got the weekly movie club, the weekly community building podcast, the weekly watching with Wiggler podcast, the Discord at the two higher levels. It's a great time. Lots of Lost talk in there. Lots of Down the Hatch specific conversation that happens each and every day.
Which,
in
by
the
way, thank you to the Hatchlings for it. Only on the Discord can you find the GIF of Jack doing the most awkward touchdown dance ever. We will not put that out on the internet. You have to go into the Discord to find that.
It's there. I promise we won't do too much plugging of the Patreon today, but there you go. It's low-hanging fruit.
Let me just put in a quick plug, though, because this is something that actually, if you're interested in the Josh and Mike of it all, there is something there for your interest.
This is worth mentioning, yes. Okay, so look, Mike Bloom and I have just we have finalized negotiations on a podcast that we have wanted to do for a very long time. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Once Upon a Time, was a show that Mike covered, a recently retired weekly Survivor podcast that I used to do over at Rob Has a Podcast called The Wiggle Room. Who knows what forms that may spring up again at some point in the future. You may also not know this, but Mike's last name is Bloom. And so for a very long time, literally for years, Mike and I have talked about, like, when are we going to launch the Wiggle Bloom? Like, that's
just natural.
It's there. It's low hanging fruit. And so we have decided that we are going to do a patron only podcast called The Wiggle Bloom as soon as we reach 750 patrons of post-show recaps, unlike the community rewatch podcast where we are saying we will do a community rewatch podcast if we hit 1,000 patrons by the end of 2020. This one has no expiration date. We just got to get 750 patrons, and the second that is activated, Mike and I will have a patron-only podcast called The Wiggle Bloom where you will get all sorts of shenanigans related to pop culture. It will be much like the Smoke Monster, shape-shifting with regularity. Oftentimes it'll be a Brant Steele Survivor simulation, or I would even do a Big Brother simulation, Mike, should the occasion arise.
Yeah, because you're sort of to Big Brother what our friend Chappelle was to Australian Survivor. So I think that'd
be a
fun way to backdoor introduce you. I think also to be candid, and I don't know if this is an incentive or a disincentive, one of the things I did text Josh upon us working through this was, I think the first thing we should do is watch Cats. So if you want that to happen, that might be the first thing we do on the Wiggle Bloom, because Josh and I are also very, you know, sort of well-versed in our musical theater fandom, and we've had, you know, few opportunities to talk about it, so I'm sure we could find the venue to properly gab on about it.
I think it would basically, it would be like, we don't know if it would be weekly, every other week, once a month, where, you know, that would all be stuff that evolves, I think. But it would be a regular excuse for Mike and I to just like talk about all the things that we would be talking about offline anyway in podcast form. And so I do think it would be really, really fun. We are going to activate that as soon as we hit 750, which who knows when that will be. But it'll be a patron only podcast. So the only way you'll be able to get it is if you are a patron of Post Show Recap. So if you love what we're doing on Down the Hatch anyway, if you want to show a little bit of support for what we're doing on the podcast, you can become a patron of Post Show Recaps with a future benefit of a new podcast, The Wiggle Bloom, which would, unlike Lost Down the Hatch, which we are getting close to, like, we're like a year and 2 months away from finishing the show.
Yep. Par Avion officially marks, from a quantity perspective, the halfway point of Lost. It is episode 61. Whoa.
Yeah.
We're halfway there. Yo,
wow. John Locke Bon Jovi in the house,
oh,
folks.
Oh, I have no hair.
I'm in a wheelchair. No, I'm not.
I'm in a Daniel Russo interrupts in the middle of the verse.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So join along if that all sounds fun. But yeah, like just pivoting straight into the Lost talk. And I think like, you know, this is... It's crazy. Par Avion, like this being the, like the literal halfway marker in terms of time on the clock, right? Hour 61. Is that what this is basically?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I think it's tough because, you know, they always do a weird way of counting, like, you know, is Exodus in three parts or is it in one part? But I do believe from a pure hour perspective, we are 61 hours in out of 122 total
hours. That's crazy. That's crazy. So we still got a decent amount of down the hatch. Once it got framed this way, though, I saw this in, you know, the Bible that you and I use, not the long forgotten series Bible, but the Bible that you and I use each and every week to do the podcast. I saw this note in there and it's like, wow, coming into it today, I was feeling like, I'm really impressed that we've gotten this far into Lost. And then coming out of this realization, I realized we still have twice as we still have, you know, we're only halfway through. We're only 50%. So we've got a full other half of Lost to get through. And then who knows what the hell we're going to do beyond that. We joke about what we'll do once we finish the rewatch. Who knows how real any of that is. But we've got a lot to talk about today, Mike, because this is an episode that I think when you think of Par Avion, if you think about it at all, which I would understand if you don't think about it much, it's remembered for a really fun ending. It's Jack spiking the football. You remember it as, and maybe more remember the scene than you remember that it's from this one, what we heard at the top of this, Mikhail getting pushed through the sonar fence, sonar pings in his ears. You remember this being the one where Claire finds out that Christian is her father and the show makes that official, and it kind of does so in like a fairly, you know, casual way, fairly relaxed major reveal. So I think those are the things you remember it for. You probably don't remember it so much for like, this is the one where they're trying to find the birds. But it is that as well.
They just need to, I mean, they should have just talked to Hurley, right? He'd be like, oh yeah, I just need to go into the jungle. Apparently the birds flock to me because they know my
name.
I can tie a note to one of those and I can dispatch them off.
Yeah. Fun episode. You know, it's a good episode of Lost, but I would say like, it's a good episode of Lost.
It's interesting. I mean, it definitely is, to spoil my ranking not too much, it isn't my good episode of Lost, quite literal.
It's good.
It's good. I think it's going to open a larger discussion, though, because I think this is a prime opportunity, Josh, and I alluded to this at the end of the last episode. I think it garners some clarification because this is, we're in a very weird, never before done part of a character arc here, where we certainly have done away with some of our main casts, right? Looking at you, Boone, and Shannon. And this is going to prove to be the final flashback episode proper. Or and Claire-centric episode in general. But the weird thing is, unlike a Boone or a Shannon or an Anna Lucia, she's not going away.
Right.
She is going to become a part of two of the next three seasons, even. So I think this is going to serve as a larger dissertation, this being truly the final time that the writers decided to put Claire front and center as to what they decided to do with her. And one of my things that I even got even further coming out of this episode is I don't have many bones to pick with Darlton. They created this incredible show. But if there's one, especially now looking back on all this stuff from the vantage point of someone who's a parent, I think, unlike Jack Shepherd, they dropped the ball on Claire Littleton. And to see how they sort of, quote unquote, send a piece of her character off here like a bird in flight is a very interesting inspection.
Well, so you bring some stuff up that makes me want to like leap ahead to some of the feedback that we've got for this episode. So there's one from Eric Divestein who wrote in and said, as one of the original main cast members, why has Claire not warranted more flashback episodes? So put a pin in that. And then another one that comes from Dallin Servo is, what is the biggest impact that the Jack and Claire relationship makes that we know that Christian is both of their fathers? And now let's unpin those things because like
immediate pinning and unpinning.
Well, because like we're going to get that reveal in this episode. And I turned the question to you, but maybe you just kind of gave your answer. Is that like, this is a ball that, like, you don't, like, get into the end zone, and you, I assume this is what you do when you catch a football and get into the end zone, that you spike it, you do a dance, a little celebratory thing. You know, it's a cool idea, right? It's very Star Wars. Right. Luke and Leia, Jack and Claire, and without the kissing, thankfully. And, do they do enough with it? Do they do anything that really, really super, super matters? I think, like, some of that judgment I need to reserve for deeper into the rewatch.
Right. Until we get to season six, when Jack and Claire actually have a chance of coming back together.
You know, I think that there are some good scenes that come out of it. I think, like, it's certainly, like, when we get into what's going on, with Jack and the church service, like, it's a powerful scene. Jack's relationship with Aaron off the island, that is powerfully connected because he knows his true connection. You know, the scene in, I believe it's the last recruit, in season six, where Jack and Claire, have their moment in the jungle. But, like, was there more directly to do with the two of them? And I think that extends to the larger conversation of, was there more just to do with Claire generally? Like, was there a, you know, she's gone from the entirety of season five in the same way that we get a Richard Alpert episode in season six, finally. Were we not owed a maternity leave style flashback telling us exactly what happened to Claire during the time that we last saw her in season four and the time she became Squirrel Mama Claire? You know, like, was there more to do with this character? I think probably the answer is yeah. I would say yes. I would say that is one of the things that, like, coulda, shoulda, woulda, like, maybe pay a little more attention to Claire as a character, but that's kind of baked into Claire from the jump. That's sort of been the Claire Littleton story from almost day one.
So that's the issue. And let me go to Eric Divestein's question first, because I've been doing some thinking about this as well. You know, we have two, technically three flashback episodes for Claire, but two off-island flashback episodes. And, you know, it really made me wonder, okay, is this really a thing of being a parent? Because so many characters in Lost become parents. You know, Jack in season six, that's the whole Kate and Aaron thing. Obviously, it's a big part of Sun's arc and Jin's assuming arc. Had he not stayed behind with Claire or stay behind with Sun? You know, there are so many characters that deal with having children in their lives and how that affects who you are as a person. And I think the issue with Claire honestly stems from the fact that she entered the show pregnant. And I think it's a really interesting idea from a thematic perspective. I think that's what makes Raised by Another such an interesting character episode for her, being like, I don't want to raise my baby on this island, and her sort of, like, foisting blame onto herself. But all those examples that I described before, we got to know the characters before they became a parent. Claire, unfortunately, whether due to the writer's sake or unfortunately due to just the circumstances that can come about from painting the picture of a parent, she was not sketched really much outside of her being a mother. And that is something that I have really opened my eyes on now becoming a parent, about how I think I sort of look back like, yeah, Claire, she's the mom. She was the pregnant lady on the island.
I think that's stuff they leaned into. But I think, like, there are aspects of Claire that they did sketch, right? Like, there's, like,
she's into astrology. Yeah.
She's a good writer, apparently. She's an excellent writer, apparently. She gives a great funeral service. You know, there are things about Claire that I think almost, the bigger one is, like, they have her disappear in season one, and then they give her an amnesia storyline. And so, like, I get your point, and I think that they like lose Claire to, like, kind of, like, giving her just, like, the sole identity of being a parent and just being worried about Aaron, and that's literally it. And I think the flashbacks in this episode are some of the best aspects of this episode. I really like the flashback scenes. I really like Goth Claire.
You know, like, yeah, well, listen, we'll talk about Wig Watch later on, but I talked about this last week. I'm so appreciative of these flashbacks to that point, because now we get to see what Claire was like pre-pregnancy. Like you said, now we can remove the label of like, okay, she's a mom, and like, okay, what was Claire really like? Granted, I don't know how old she's supposed to be here. Obviously, at least 16 or whatever the driving age is in Australia when she's working at her little Hot Topic tattoo parlor. But I like seeing.
You should go pay her a visit, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
Now finish up the sleeve.
Well, I don't know. I'd rather maybe go to Atra than I would to go to Claire at this point.
That's because you want a beat down from Atra's brother and friends.
Listen, a Chad beat down, that's priceless. Yes. That's like a MasterCard commercial from hell. But I think that, you know, I think it exposed new parts of Claire's character that I was so excited to see. And that's why, to that point, it does suck that we don't see any more. I mean, I do wonder... I guess assuming, and we'll get into this, I think, with the Christian stuff, this was the last time that she ever saw Christian Shepherd, save when she thinks she sees Christian in the jungle in season 4. But I do wonder if there's a universe where there are more Claire flashback episodes, maybe almost like an Anthony Cooper situation, like he keeps popping up in her life. You know, a lot of time passes between raven-haired Claire and the blonde Claire who's pregnant and says goodbye to her mom before she leaves. You know, before she gets on the plane. And so there could have been more opportunities for him to come into her life. Cause I could imagine some people would be like, well, if there are more Claire flashbacks, what would they talk about? I'd love to see, as much as we hate Thomas, how did she meet him? What's the relationship with her aunt? How does this reveal with Christian Shepherd complicate things? Cause now to answer Dallin Servo's question, I think the Christian Shepherd reveal was something, and I don't know if this is a hot take. I think it was really exciting on paper, but I think it was badly executed. And I think it's for the reasons that you stated, like there are going to be snatches of it. But when your end game relationship that takes more importance is Claire and Kate over Claire and Jack, it makes the revelation feel a bit more of a nothing burger than it probably should be, considering how at the time it was seen as one of the biggest character connections yet.
You know, what's occurring to me is there's, I think... So in season 3 is going to be our final hurrah for flashbacks. So, you know, but not completely, right? Because season 4 does have flashback episodes. There are flashbacks.
Yeah, and technically season 5 does with like Miles.
Yeah, with Miles. Like they still exist. And so there's still opportunities to do it. And so it's not just like, I think season 6 could have had a really great Claire episode that shows us what happened to her in season 5. But also that, season 4 had like a fairly prime spot to do a great Claire episode, where I would maybe consider that Cabin Fever, which is a John Locke flashback that shows just like all of the ways in which John Locke's life sucked. Tell me something I don't know. You know, like just like giving us a bit of that. And really, I don't know. I'm lower on Cabin Fever than most. We'll see when we get there. But like that feels to me like that could be a Claire flashback episode. Because one of the big reveals at the end of that episode is Christian Shepherd in the cabin with Claire in the cabin. And so what's the episode of like, how that happens? How did they get there? Is that an episode within season 4 that is doing, you know, flashbacks from Claire following who we come to learn as the man in black on the island to Claire having more interactions with Christian, maybe even during like the final trip to Australia for Christian? You know, what's the other side of that argument in the rain that Anna Lucia comes and grabs Christian for? Is Claire involved
Could she have, like, what are her complicated feelings about the way that he visited her in his last days? Did she know that he died, quite possibly, and how that affects her and her ultimate decision? You know, she is pregnant at the time and trying to figure out what to do with the baby. Could that have been affected by the fact that she has, you know, an illegitimate father?
There's so much, you know, the whole idea of like the raised by another stuff, and like Aaron can't be raised by another no matter what, like that is, I know, like a mystery that some people feel like it's not fully, you know, capitalized on. And I think that kind of just extends to Claire overall. And one of the things about Par Avion in this episode, which again, I think it's a good episode of Lost. I enjoy it. It's an episode of Lost. You know, I think I ended up rating it again, just to jump around. I think I rated it exactly the same as I rated The Whole Truth, in the end, which is another one of those episodes. It's like, it's a good episode with a great ending. And that's how I feel about this one. But one of the things that I kept thinking about is, even though like they give her like a really slight fight kind of on island story. Emily DeRaven is very charming. And I think that there was a really compelling character storyline that was left on the field with Claire overall. I think that they express somebody here in the times that they do pay attention to her, they express somebody who is fascinating. And they express somebody here who, like, we can kind of talk about it even in the context of this episode because they get into Rousseau, right? Like, they get into some of the things with Rousseau.
Yeah, and when we talked about this during maternity leave, that she's the new So. Yeah. She's the one who becomes Rousseau in season six.
So, like, they start going there, and I just don't think that they go there enough. And whether that's because Lost becomes, like, too top-heavy in certain areas or what,
I think maybe the Charlie death also doesn't help it. That I think another thing that they do with her character, to your point, is I think once they sort of tie her more into Charlie, then she becomes so, you know, tied into that season two stuff in particular, say maternity leave, that it really becomes like Claire and Charlie. So then when Charlie's out of it, you could deal with a really interesting storyline of like, what does Claire do post Charlie? And maybe that ties into
which
a bit
they
of her.
Don't really explore, frankly.
Exactly. Like, there's maybe that informs a bit of her psychosis in season four, but it's not really informed or it's not really explicit. It's something that you have to put together.
They explore it like a little bit in the season four premiere is my memory of it. And then, like, you know, she's pretty much not really talking about Charlie all that much anymore after that. So yeah, I think that they just make some choices with Claire that I don't fully understand. I think they kind of gave up on the character to a certain degree. Like, you know, even having her completely removed from season five, like in entirely gone.
Right. And this was not a AAA or a Cynthia Watros thing. Like, Emily DeRaven wanted to be on the show, I believe.
Yeah. Well, they end up having her for the entirety of the final season. So clearly, like, they still had Claire plans and, like, she was on board to be back. But for whatever reason, they just feel like they don't have a story to tell with her. And I just don't, especially with the Man in Black storyline really coming into the fore starting in season five, that I feel like you could have Claire there in bits and pieces. I don't know. I know we're talking a lot, frankly, surrounding Claire before we even get into the episode, but it's hard to watch this episode and not have, especially this being Claire's final centric episode. Yeah. It's hard to not have a lot of this stuff on the mind, especially because I think the episode begins in a really evocative way. And so let's get into it, is that we start with a flashback. We open on an eye because, of course, we open on an eye, and it's another crash, right? It's another accident. And I think that the way that they render this is brutal.
The
shards of glass in Claire's hair, like, they immediately let you know that this is like a Claire that we have not met yet with the goth hair. And say what you will about the wig watch and stuff, I think it's effective for me. It gives me this feeling of her being like very young and very different from the Claire that we know right now, more independent. But she, like, literally has to, like, climb through the shattered dash.
Yeah, poor Carol Littleton. I don't know if she was not wearing her seatbelt or something, but she got flat out ejected through the windshield.
And so, like, they tell you a lot with just the imagery, and it is vicious. It's very, very, very effective. And I feel like it really sets you in a place to be, like, really nervous throughout the entire Claire flashback. It's a very powerful, there's a lot of, like, implied violence in this episode.
Which I think also, again, is also supposed to inform, like, why Claire herself is a bit of a broken person. Because, again, we haven't really explored that. We more so explore why she's a broken person on island, because, you know, she got kidnapped by Ethan. She had to have a child on the island, but raised by another, Thomas was a douche that walked out on her. But this is really exploring, like, wow, it's not as bad as John Locke, but Claire has had a pretty effed up life up to this point.
She's had a tough life. But she's going to have a great day, Mike, because on the island, she wakes up to a fruit plate.
Oh, look, Aaron. Your mom has finally decided to wake up. The only way I could get you to sleep in was to borrow the midget.
And what is all this?
An aperitif of mysterious island fruit before the breakfast picnic I have set up in your honor. Short walk down the beach.
What's gotten into you, Charlie?
Sorry?
Just, you've been so depressed all week, and now it's breakfast in bed and picnics.
I woke up this morning, I thought it's time to stop feeling sorry for yourself and seize the day, and I can't think of anyone I would rather do some day-seizing with than you. So, what do you say? Let's drop the cherubah with Auntie Son and Uncle Jin, and you and I go for a little stroll.
I would love to.
So, this episode, I've heard a lot of people say that this is evocative of season one, much like we sort of talked about with Trisha Tanaka is dead. And I think this clip is a good example of that, right? Like, this feels like a lot of rat-a-tat banter that Charlie and Claire engage with in season one. The peanut butter conversation, for instance, it's clear that Trisha Tanaka has very clearly turned around Charlie's mood. They've turned the ignition key, and now he is humming like a motor, seizing the day, carpe diem, as he would say. You know, they're going to use Jin's net that he'd used to catch some carpe diem to catch some birds later on.
Right.
But it's a fun setup for, you know, what's going to be a very interesting episode for the relationship that's going to essentially define a lot of Claire's arc for the rest of season three.
Yeah, I like it. It's cute. It's just like, if the rest of the episode was just like the two of them on a picnic, that would have big Trisha Tanaka energy for me.
Yeah, though I will also say that picnics, they're not as cursed as the sex tent, but they're probably next in line of, like, anytime you go on a picnic, it's bad news. And maybe that's why Desmond, we'll talk about later, decides to stop the picnic. He's like, I've seen those episodes. Yeah, I know what happens so when good. You go on a picnic.
Yeah, I don't need to see the future to know this is bad, Charlie. I keep seeing you dying and you're choosing to go on a picnic? What
Have
the
you
hell,
seen Two
man?
For the Road?
Yeah,
or Do No Harm?
It's no good. Much harm will come to you. So all that's going on. Meanwhile, in the jungle, the inspectors Rousseau plus Mikhail are on their way to the barracks, and there's some squabbling over how to get there. John Locke, man, my guy, John Locke is having an episode.
This is a tough, it's tough to say like bad episode because it's done purposefully, right? And I think this is also going to really, much like we've talked about in season one, I think this is a really good setup for the man from Tallahassee next week in terms of Locke, despite being a quote unquote team player now that he's got his groove back, is still really striking out on his own. But man, he is stubborn AF in this episode.
Yeah, big time. And he has plans. You know, he's heard about, he's going to hear about the submarine. He's got the C4 in his backpack. Like, this dude's thinking ahead and it ain't good. So he gets mad at Saeed, like, you're following a map. And Saeed's like, you're following a stick.
Oh boy. And that's the thing is, like, Locke, I think your Mishigash can work on some people, but the one person you don't mess with when it comes to this is Saeed Jarrah.
Saeed Jarrah, man. Come on.
He has like followed you to a certain extent and given you like an inch, and you have tried to take a mile. And now Saeed's like, what are you doing? You thought you'd get all this stuff past me? No, no, no. No more nonsense, Mr. John Locke.
I don't think so. So they're also arguing about whether or not they should just kill Mikhail. You think we should shoot him like a dog? John says, no, I like dogs, which is funny. And so Mikhail apparently is like, no, you're going in the right direction. Just keep going. So they're going to keep going. Meanwhile, a really nice array of food at the breakfast picnic. Maybe some hot milk, I would assume.
Ooh,
that is.
Oh God.
That is warm milk, would be my guess.
I don't know. Maybe it's like condensed milk or something. You know, those things that come in a can that you don't need to refrigerate.
Like sweetened condensed milk is just like in a jar. Like that is going to be some hot viscous shit, man.
Yeah,
like,
maybe Michael should have been shooting at that. I think that's clearly easier to waste than the ranch in the middle of the jungle.
So they're about to sit down when Desmond swings by. And I'm sorry we don't have this sound clip because I think it's really funny how Desmond's like, oh, well, here I am with a rifle. Thought maybe you'd want to go hunting with me, Charlie. And Charlie's like, no, I'm going to have a picnic with Claire. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, pretty sure it would be much better if you went hunting with me, because Charlie, of all the things you could do today, hunting with me might be the best thing that you could do. And it's just like, Desmond is hysterical in this episode.
It's so tough because I'm ultimately so glad that he ends up telling Claire, because I feel like in another universe, we could have had a whole season where Desmond's like, I can't tell anybody.
Yeah, I know.
And that'll lead to so many, like, you know, misunderstandings. But it's worth it for these, like, 2 minutes of comedy of Desmond trying to be wink, wink, nudge, nudge right over Claire's head. Which, to his point, it ended up being fine right now because Claire just sees the birds and her mind is not focused on this weird conversation whatsoever.
Yeah, she is looking over her head and she sees birds. They're coming south. The sea birds, they're migrating. And she sees a glint of something. She's like, I got an idea. I can get us saved. I can get us all rescued. And it turns out that Claire watched a lot of nature programs with her mother back in the day.
Yeah, another reason why Charlie loves her, I'm assuming.
I would assume so as well. And so she's like, all right, Sun and Jin, we need nets. We need fish. We need buckets. We're going to catch birds. We're going to send a message via carrier pigeon. And that is how we are going to get rescued. And so everyone's like, oh, this is an interesting idea. I kind of like this, except for Charlie, who is looking at Desmond, who's still lurking very oddly with a rifle nearby. And Charlie's like, maybe this is stupid. And she's like, why? She's like, I don't know. You watch nature programs? Does that make you an expert? And it's like, hey, Dominic Monaghan, let's hope this clip doesn't come back to haunt you, sir. But he's like, don't waste your time. Whatever happened to seizing the day, Charlie? He's like, I don't know. This is not something I'd like to seize. So he walks away, and now Charlie and Claire are in a little bit of a tiff.
Yeah, hopefully when people were reviewing Dominic Monaghan's nature show, nobody took the clip, don't see the point, that Charlie says and just attached that as their entire review.
It's another reason why Par Avion has not gotten a lot of play, and I'm sure he's grateful for that. So that's what's going on here. She's a little annoyed. There's a great moment where Sawyer's about to call Claire Barbie, but he calls her Claire instead because he can't use nicknames.
And actually, you know what? Claire sort of is the Barb, right? Because she disappears. Yeah. And unfortunately, she doesn't wind up in the Upside Down.
Justice for Claire. Justice for Claire.
She winds up in the Sideways, I guess, from her perspective. I mean, it's interesting, too, because as much excitement as these characters show, and while I'm not entirely against, like, hey, let's go back to sort of the survival aspect to it, I don't know, Josh, I couldn't help but think of SOS when I was watching this, of like, okay, now once again, another character said, oh, we should be exploring forms of rescue. And not to say again that like, oh, we can't do this storyline again, but I couldn't help but have this episode in the back of my head reverberating, and particularly why they're so gung-ho about this and less so about Bernard's SOS signal from last season.
That's interesting. Maybe because hauling rocks or coconuts is a terrible job, but like setting up fishing traps, Jin and Sun are like, yeah, that's our wheelhouse. We're good.
Yeah,
like,
maybe Claire's a better leader than Bernard was.
I think that seems very likely. I think maybe you're on to something there. Flashback time, and what's there to say other than there's this police officer who's like, hey, Claire, so did you do it? Is this your fault? And she's like, I didn't do anything. I was driving. He's like, yeah, well, listen, it's my job to grill you on stuff like this when there's a fatality. She's like, my mom's not dead. He's like, ooh, sorry, I misread the report.
I would want to like dock points from both Law and Order and I think maybe Medicine for the first time, because we'll get to this later when the doctor comes in to give the diagnosis of coma. Just like, everyone representing institutions in this episode are so blunt and mean and arguably not very good at their jobs.
Yeah,
that
this
poor
dude
Claire
sucks.
Has just been besotted by so many people.
This dude sucks. And obviously, like, a lot of the episode is dealing with, like, Claire's feelings of, like, is this all my fault? Right. You know, and feelings of guilt. Although I think maybe the themes are a little bit mismanaged as well in this episode, but
right,
whatever.
Yeah, I think the idea of like, again, because it deals more with the Christian shepherd of it all, it does sort of they sort of almost make the whole idea of like guilt and blame secondary, save that
as
final monologue.
As soon as he shows up. Yeah. All right, so meanwhile, in the jungle, we're at that one little stretch of riverbed that seems to everybody
that
always
everyone
seems
has
to heart find.
To hearts with.
Yeah, so it's Kate and Russo this time. Why aren't we listening?
Can I ask you something? I told you that your daughter was living with them. And you haven't asked me a single question about her. You haven't...
Your friend. Jack. You care about him?
Yes?
Imagine 16 years from now. You're told he was still alive. But in your heart, you know that he wouldn't remember you. He wouldn't know you. He wouldn't even know that you ever cared about him. I haven't asked you questions about my daughter because I do not want to know the answers.
What
I really like that scene.
Yeah, me too.
It's small, but I think it's a good check-in with Rousseau, who was literally pretty absent from last episode, save, you know, coming in at the last second. And I think it's a really interesting question. It's a really interesting inspection of her character, because on paper, this is something that she's always wanted. 16 years since her child was stolen away, and she's been searching for her, thinking about her every day since.
And now she's like, I'm nervous.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that there's complications.
Scared.
In that now that it's happened, it's like, oh, crap, this is nice. But also, she doesn't know who I am.
I thought you were going to... But also, shit, I'm nervous.
Well, yeah, and she's... Well, but I think, you know, there's a point that she has no idea who I am. I really have no idea who she is.
Yeah.
She was stolen as a baby. I don't know what she's been doing. So there's nervousness there, but there's also, like, a palpable anxiety as to, you know, almost like you, when your wish is granted, like, it's not everything that it seems. You've wanted this thing for so long, but I can imagine there is some fright that it's not going to be what you always imagine it to be, that you'd have, like, a loving embrace. Instead, it's, oh, here's the person who happens to be my... It's almost like giving up a child for adoption, you know, and then meeting them 16 years after the fact. Yeah, you're connected with each other, but do you really know each other? And I think that Rousseau being surprisingly vocal about that is very on brand for her character, and I think adds a new dimension to what, albeit is going to, you know, not really hit its moment until the season 3 finale, but still a good thing to put a pin in.
You know what else is interesting about this is the situation that Rousseau is sketching out for Kate about Jack. Imagine meeting Jack again a few years from now, and you find out that he's still alive, but he doesn't remember you, he doesn't know you, he doesn't blah, blah, blah. There's a version of this that happens for Kate, except it's with Sawyer, and it's not 16 years, right? It's 3 years. But Kate's going to, like, come back and see Sawyer, and they had such a powerful thing, and then they're going to be gone from each other's lives for years, and then they come back and so much life has changed. They have different people who they're prioritizing at that point, that, like, a lot of that old way is gone. And it is like a nervous energy when Kate sees Sawyer for that first time, those first few days that they're interacting. So I like that there's, like, whether it's intentional foreshadowing or not, and I would lean towards not, I just think that there is some resonance to this for Kate, especially, and even when she goes to meet Claire again, you know, she comes back to the island specifically to find Claire to reunite Aaron with her mother, that when she sees Claire finally, like, she's going to be so happy to see Claire, and then Claire's going to look up at Kate and be like, I'm going to kill you for taking my child, basically. So I think a lot of this is going to reverberate throughout Kate's storyline, what Rousseau is talking about here.
Well, even on top of that, look at something like the incident, why she was so promptly against the whole idea of let's reset the timeline so that we land in LAX and none of this happens. And this talk gets talked about a lot over the episode as to how each character stands philosophically with that idea, that I think there is something to Kate's character as to, like, the fear of being forgotten in a certain perspective. And so I do think this, I don't think Rousseau obviously knows this, but it ends up unintentionally, I can imagine, really hitting home with her.
Yeah. All right, so they keep walking through the jungle. Rousseau is, like, kind of walking away from the rest of the pack, which is kind of funny. She's, like, got the high ground. Everyone else is on the low. And Kate has some questions for Mikhail, which leads to a rather awkward conversation.
So how'd you get here? How'd you get onto this island?
Don't waste your breath. Whatever he says will be a lie.
I was recruited when I was 24. I was approached by a man...
I didn't ask you when, I asked you how.
They brought me on the submarine.
So your people, they can just come and go whenever they want?
Go, yes. But 2 weeks ago, our underwater beacon stopped emitting its locator signal. There was an event. An electromagnetic pulse. It would be impossible to come back.
Why would you want to come back?
You would not understand.
Join me.
I misspoke. What I meant to say is, you're not capable of understanding.
And why am I not capable?
Kate, because you are not on the list.
What list?
The man who brought me here, who brought all of my people here, he is a magnificent man.
If Ben's so magnificent, then why did he need one of us to save him?
Ben is not. I will try to make this as simple as I can. You are not on the list because you are flawed. Because you are angry. And weak. And frightened.
The more I learn about your people, the more I suspect you're not as omniscient as you have us believe. Don't speak to us as if you know us.
Of course I don't know you, Saeed Jarrah. How could I? And you, Kaedost, are a complete stranger to me. But you, John Locke, you I might have a fleeting memory of. But I must be confused, because the John Locke I know was perhaps...
Hey, don't dox him.
Don't out on John Locke. Yeah, he spent a good amount of days keeping this a secret, except to a couple people.
That's not cool, man. Mikhail with the flex, right? And Saeed Big, you don't know anything about it. It's like, oh yeah, no, Saeed Jarrah, I've got no idea who you were. Kate Austin.
It's like, damn it, I shouldn't have been thinking about that cat. I should have killed him. Right.
Shit, he was right.
That's the thing,
whole
is
time.
That Mikhail is using the real estate that he still has. He still has some information above them. Now let's talk about though. Legitimacy of that. Let's continue our discussion from last week as to lies and truths within Mikhail's statements. How truthful do you think is his entire thing about the, oh, there's a list and you aren't on it for these specific reasons?
I think it's truthful insofar as Mikhail believes it. I think it's truthful insofar as, like, the company line that Ben touts is Jacob, 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 Jacob this, Jacob that. Jacob told me to do this, so you gotta do this for Jacob. And it's effectively a cult under his leadership, right? And, like, there are certain people within it who, like Juliet, are starting to feel like, no, Ben's an awful dude, and, like, this is not the guy who should be at the top of the food chain. And then there's people like Mikhail who are, like, anything for leader, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that, like, when he's saying that Ben isn't the magnificent man, I think that, like, for him, it's like, but Ben is the conduit to the magnificent man. He's the guy, he speaks for the magnificent man. And so it is, it's very like fanatical in that way. So I buy this from Mikhail that he's a company man for sure. He's a loyalist.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was serving them Kool-Aid instead of iced tea last week. I think it's an interesting parallel as well, where last season we got, oh yeah, you don't want to talk with our leader. Oh yeah, the guy with the beard, that's not our leader. We get a similar thing here with like, oh, Ben is your leader. Well, it's actually not Ben. It's actually this other guy. It's a very anime-like trope, right? Of like, I'm not the big bad. This is the true big bad. I mean, it's interesting because maybe there's like, I don't know, a separate list separate from the Jacob stuff of it all. Because I do remember in season 6, like, I think Jacob says, at a certain perspective, like, I chose these candidates because they are specifically flawed. And Kate would therefore be on the list because she is quite literally flawed. But maybe Ben made his own personal choices. Maybe he has his own, like, fake list going, something like a Survivor boot list, you know? Mm. Like, he's not the spoiler, but he wants to get rumors out there.
Yeah.
But I also love, if we're talking about more foreshadowing of Kate, I love Mikhail, you know, talking about like, oh, people aren't able to come back to that. And Kate's like, why would anyone want to come back here? Which is her MO as soon as, you know, one of the last scenes here in season 3. It's like, why the hell do you want to go back there? Yeah. So I think it's going to be a nice, you know, attitude that Kate is going to bring all the way off the island for quite some time.
Maybe this was the moment that Jacob doesn't bring up later. It's like, actually, the moment I crossed your name out is when you said, like, why would anyone want to come back?
Yeah, like that really hurt my feelings.
I heard that. So, I got very
but I
good
would
hearing.
Say, If whoever made this list, calling Saeed weak and frightened, like, what feeds have you been watching, man? That is not Saeed Jarrah.
Look, they are human beings, and they are all weak and frail in their own ways. There are ways in which all of these people are fractured and broken and problematic and, you know, dealing with their demons and stuff. But try looking in a mirror, Mikhail. Just give it a close look.
I try to, but I can only see half of it.
I can only see half the mirror. All right, they find the pylons. Here's the fence, the sonar fence.
A sonic weapon is right here in front of them.
It's a sonic weapon. All right, so down back at the beach, Claire and Jin building the net. Jin speaking some rudimentary English. He's getting along. He's getting by really well.
I do sort of question. I mean, I guess I don't know how else you could catch birds using this net, but it seemed like they just set up like a soccer goal. instead of just sort of propping the net up vertically.
Dude, I am not going to question their tactics. It
I don't
works.
Know, maybe I have to watch more nature shows.
It works, if not for Desmond, which we'll get into in a moment. I just wanted to take a moment to give some props to Jin and Sun, who are so on board with Claire's plan. They're like, yeah, we'll spend the whole day doing this, Claire. This is fun. And they were also going to be on babysitting duty, too. So they're just
that's the thing is, I think the alternative is to watching Aaron, like, we're done this for the umpteenth time. I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe that's another thing why the Claire storyline sort of like goes, is because Aaron becomes such a big importance. And we talked about this with Raised by Another. Then now he's just been relegated to like, who's going to watch Aaron? Let's just foist him off upon another character and not deal with him directly. Like maternity leave until season 5 is really going to be like one of the last big Aaron centric scenes. And so it's weird to be like how concerned we were about the child in the first season to now sort of have him as an afterthought in the episode proper is an odd shift.
Yeah, I just love Jin and Sun working so closely with Claire. And
well, it's interesting because also Sun and Claire were both FOKs. They were both friends of Kate in season 1. And now Kate has sort of been off doing her own things. And so them finding company with each other, I think, is very interesting. It's sort of like when George and Elaine have to interact in Seinfeld. You know, what happens when Jerry isn't there?
I'm just going to let FOK go by. Sun is, she's saying, like, this was my mom's worst nightmare, that I'd be, cutting up bait, that I'd be married to the son of a fisherman. To the son of a fisherman.
Yes, yeah. I was just thinking it, too. The only pig who could ever love me.
Was the son of a fisherman. and so Claire's going to say, oh, well, my mom used to be a librarian. She's like, used to be. And we go back, and we find out, in the flashback, Claire's awful aunt, who's just Aunt Lindsay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm debating, and maybe by the end of this, I'll give Lindsay an LVP point. I wasn't sure if I should give her, like, sympathy because she is in a very tough situation. Her sister is in a coma. But yeah, she is very brusque to Claire
She's
here.
Like, oh, how dare you go home and take a shower? It's like, what do you want from her?
Yeah, there are showers, I suppose, available in a hospital, but they are awkward.
She wants to go home and get a change of clothes? Like, let her go. So she's terrible. And then the doctor comes and is like, yeah, we don't really know what's going on here.
Yeah, this doctor is terrible. I listen, maybe a medical correspondent can follow up with this, but like, this dude, I know that Christian said he has like an Australian correspondent. Maybe this guy's on the same level as Jack Shepherd when it comes to bedside manner, because this dude has terrible people skills.
I would also, I have no idea the legality behind any of this stuff of like, Christian Shepherd is going to pay for everything, but he wants to be confidential. Like,
yeah, like, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
I have no idea. Is that not something that would need to be disclosed here? Like, I just don't know if, like, that is the anonymous benefactor thing in this situation. If Claire or Lindsay has like power of attorney, like do they not get to know?
Medical funds should not be the equivalent of like a bartender gives you a drink and is like, that man down at the bar said this round's on him.
I've never, here's the tequila and tonic.
Like, drinks on him.
Yeah, everybody with him. I have no idea. I've never been in this situation. Somebody with expertise, we'd love to hear from you. But anyway.
Also, Lostpedia actually says it is unlikely that Carol Littleton would be forced to fund any medical expenses as a result of a car accident in Australia. The cost of any medical expenses would be borne by CTP or Medicare. Naturally, any insurance company would seek to limit their exposure to cost, but Medicare is obliged to fund the life-threatening medical care of a quote-unquote public patient, and CTP covers the medical care of any vehicle accident victim. So maybe that's also a symbol of like American writers writing Australian situations, is because of our own healthcare situation, we could not imagine a major car accident being covered by the public.
Yeah. And just like FOK, I'm just going to leave that right there, because that's fucked up for sure. So back on the island, Jin and Claire and Sun, they've got the trap, they got the bird, they're so close. And then Desmond, this Desmond is just shooting off shots. He's like, oh, you guys are here? I'm so sorry.
And I do love Claire. This is a good Claire episode on Island, because she's immediately onto his bullshit.
He's like,
right?
What is your deal?
She's like, where's the boar? And he's like, oh, I lost it. I'm not a good shot.
I lost it. Claire's like, what's your deal? why don't you want me catching these freaking birds? And Des is like, I don't know. I can't tell you. So Claire is rip shit right now. All right. Then meanwhile, at the sonar fence, we've already heard this is the start of the episode. It's the security perimeter. It's the alarm system.
It hasn't functioned in years, says Mikhail.
Like everything else on this island. And hint, hint.
And then clearly, was that a little Count Jacula I hear?
Intent.
And then they throw, Locke decides like, all right, well, we test it. And so he takes Mikhail and shoves him through.
See,
and
this is so interesting because again, speaking to, cause I want to get into the Mikhail of it all, cause this is a long held theory that I want to present. But looking at this again as a setup for the man from Tallahassee, this is such a fantastic comparison. Because Locke throwing Mike Mikhail through the pylons, not too dissimilar from Anthony Cooper throwing Locke out the window that we're going to see next episode. It's this idea of like, I'll sacrifice somebody if you know, I think that he's about to give me away. There's this really interesting scene where despite Mikhail getting interrupted about Locke's big secret, he glares at him and smiles at him afterwards like, yeah, Johnny boy, I know your big secret and I, you know, I have this leverage over you. So it's so interesting that Locke is showing signs, much like Sawyer did, of like repeating the cycle of the man that he once hated. But we're going to see how that impacted him as, you know, as recent as next week.
Locke is prone to anger, and I think especially where his father is concerned, he gets very triggered. So, you know, maybe it was a trigger point for him. But I would also say John Locke later on is going to be told, kill your dad and you're one of us, and he won't be able to do it. He has to enlist Sawyer in the cause. John Locke has no trouble throwing Mikhail through a sonic fence right now, and later on is going to have no trouble shooting or stabbing a woman.
Naomi.
In the back. So John Locke being a very selective murderer. Right now, selective is very, very,
hey, you know what? He's apologetic.
Very choosy. Very choosy. Yeah. He's like, oops, sorry about
sorry.
That. As,
Locky.
Let, Johnny.
So, okay. So here's my theory, Josh.
So they throw Mikhail through the fence. He goes, thank you. And you start seeing like the blood is oozing out of his ears. Mike, I don't know if you stopped down and saw it. Like it is like a blood bag. It is like a squib that is shooting out of Andrew Divoff's ear. There is like a small, tiny, thin little geyser of blood that is juicing out of his ear if you stop and you look down. And then he drops down on the ground. Count Jacula is really excited.
I was going to say, don't talk too soon. He's going
to
come out of his coffin 1 week early.
Excuse me. Yeah. He's good evening. Very excited about that. And Mikhail, for all intents and purposes, it would appear that he is deceased.
So here's the thing. It's weird. We're going to talk about the next scene. And, you know, when Kate's going to be inspecting Mikhail, you could see Andrew Divoff breathing. And that has been sort of headcanon to say, well, he was actually alive the whole time, because we're going to see him pop up in DOC, the man behind the curtain, and finally through the looking glass. Or was it him? Something that I would like to keep in all of our heads, Josh, and hopefully not come spilling out like a geyser of fake blood. I have personally always held the belief that Mikhail Bakunin did indeed die thanks to the sonic fence. The Mikhail Bakunin that we see from DOC onwards was not Mikhail Bakunin, but indeed the smoke monster.
Yeah, so you've mentioned this kind of in passing a few times that you really like the idea that Mikhail dies here and that every time we see Mikhail again in season 3, he's the monster. And I've been really interested to get to this point because it's not something I've ever really considered for myself. And every time you've talked about it, I've been like, really? But I want to entertain it. I want to entertain it. I want to see you point it out along the way. And I'm looking forward to watching these episodes with that as a possible interpretation in mind, because I've never done it. So I think that's going to be fun, like to think about, well, like if he's the smoke monster, why doesn't he just like smoke monster his way into the looking glass? Why is he doing any form of deliberation at the looking glass? So you'll have to convince me on some of this, but I'm open to it. I'm open to being convinced. I'm open to, you know, fan fiction theorizing that this is the smoke monster here. For me, I have always taken it, and I saw it again this time, that Andrew Divoff is very much breathing when they do like a look at him later on. Like, that man is fully breathing.
then that might have to be a doc on Kate then for being like, well, there's nothing wrong with him. He's definitely dead.
Yeah. All right. So let's put a pin in that and we can unpin that and repin it and unpin it.
I think it's going to be a while from now, right? Because not until again, DOC, which I think is what, like 18 or 19 that we get him popping up again.
Yeah, we've got time to get into all of that. So post Mikhail's death, there is some tense conversation that's going to take place.
Looks like he suffered a cerebral hemorrhage.
Why did you do that? We needed him.
They were never going to trade him for Jack.
You don't know that.
Well, you don't know it either. What we do know is that he shot one of his own people who didn't want to be in this exact situation. So I'm going to stick with my opinion.
Yeah, well, we could have discussed it.
But nobody asked me about it when we brought him along in the first place. All right. Pardon me for not knowing that they had a sonic weapon fence. I didn't know he was going to die. How would I know that?
Why are you really here? You here for Jack?
Why else would I be here?
We'll talk about this later.
Fine by me. Just tell me how we're going to go through this.
We're not going to go through it. We're going over it. Saeed, where's the axe?
It's in his pack.
Oh, wait a minute, I got it. Here, I got it.
I thought you didn't know there was any C4.
Well, I stand corrected.
Why did you take it?
You never know when a little C4 might come in handy.
You'll have to do better than that.
Josh, John Locke doesn't have just egg on his face this episode. He's got a whole damn omelet with that scene.
A frittata. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One whole egg, white egg frittata dripping all over him as he gets called out for this. He's like, well, nobody told me about bringing Mikhail along. He gets caught for complaining about the C4 earlier when it's found in his bag. Like, this is just a bad episode
is
for
this,
him.
Is this one of the single worst John Locke looks? Is this scene? Like, he's just like, well, you didn't know that he wasn't going to die. You didn't know, like, you don't know, Kate. Like, it's just like the whataboutisms from John Locke here are very, very funny in like a way where it does not look very flattering for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I can even get past that. It's the C4 in the pack. That it's like as bad as when, you know, it turns out that Jack put the dynamite in his own pack instead of Kate's in Exodus. Of like, man, you see right through it and he has no excuse. He is caught red-handed and now everything is just up in the air and he's like, at least he didn't do a how did that get in there type of thing. Like, oh, Mikhail must have put it in there.
Oh, he must have put it there. They framed me. I've been framed while I was playing chess.
Part of me for not knowing that there is a C4. That's also, I love Terry O'Quinn's delivery of that he almost like goes half Goldblum there for a second.
Yeah. Maybe he's like, when I was playing the computer game, maybe Mikhail had access to my backpack at that point. Which, by the way, Jake Prow had written and said the computer's name, it's got to be Chester.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, they're probably spreadsheets of all the Wink games that's won and lost.
While I was playing with Chester, Mikhail must have... He framed me. It was a frame job. Good thing we killed him. He was trying to sow discontent in our ranks.
Too bad we can't ask him. It's not like he's breathing or anything right now.
Yeah, he's super dead.
Maybe in another version of Lost, Josh, maybe written by a different group of writers, the sonic weapon fence does not kill Mikhail, but turn him into a blue hedgehog that runs really fast.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Mikhail suddenly, I love chili dogs.
Exactly. Who would be Dr. Robotnik then? Would Locke be Dr. Rolokbotnik?
Rolokbotnik. Yeah, I could see it. He could.
Just he's a mustache.
Yeah, just give him the stash and he could do it. All right, so back at the beach, Claire reads Charlie for filth.
I wrote in my notes
she
is
goes,
that.
She goes, Charlie, you ass!
I realize that maybe it's because I played Among Us recently, but this episode feels like a game of Among Us where Charlie and Desmond are the imposters, and they're like trying to be co-conspirators.
I saw you venting!
Yeah, exactly. Like, Charlie, I just saw you venting. No, that didn't happen at all. It was Jin and Sun. I think they're looking pretty shady right now.
Yeah, no way.
Desmond's sus. Yeah. He's Sussmond.
Yeah, Sussmond. But she's like, you know what, Charlie? You gotta leave. You didn't even seize the day with me. You're lying. You're a liar.
Yeah, some newsy you are, Charlie.
I love when she goes, close the gates because you're not seizing the day. I love when she says to Charlie, you know what? Also, by the way, this is a new rule I've decided. I don't want my baby to be around liars, so it's time for you to leave.
Yeah, drug addicts and baby drowners, maybe. But liars? That's where I draw the line.
Claire's hilarious here. She's like, I don't want him to be around liars, so it's time for you to go. And Charlie's like, what? What did I do? I'm just trying not to die. And I don't think that you believe me. And she just yells at him to leave, so he leaves. Flashback time. There's a new doctor in town, the American. Is it Hopper?
It could have. Oh, I would have loved to see David Harbour pop up in his Hawaiian shirt, like, hey, Claire.
It's not him. It's not him. Of course, it's Christian. And we're going to hear Christian Shepherd and Claire meet for the very first time.
Excuse me. The nurse said, are you a doctor?
Yes, I'm very sorry. I shouldn't be disturbing you. I was just leaving.
What are you doing here?
I was just on my way out, Lindsay.
If Carol knew you were here...
She'd what? What would she do? She wouldn't be acting the way you are.
Aunt Lindsay, what's going on here? Who is he? It doesn't matter. Just go.
Maybe you should tell her, Lindsay. She deserves to know.
Please, just leave us alone.
You are not the arbiter here.
No.
In these circumstances, I do believe that Claire has every right to know.
Just stop it! Are you the one paying the bills? Are you the one taking care of all this?
Yes.
And who are you?
I'm your father, Claire.
It's not true. It's impossible. And she like grabs her hand that's inside a sleeve.
Yeah, well, she's got the cast on. It's holding it together.
Yeah, what if she had a metallic arm that came out of the cast?
Can you play the very start of the clip again? Because I think in the background, like on the speaker, it sounds like someone's like saying like, Travis, paging Travis.
Oh, let's see.
Like after Claire says, who are you? There's just like a little stretch where you can hear someone like paging in the background. Is the person saying Travis, paging right. Travis?
Let's listen for ghost Travis. Let's see. Maybe not. Let's see. Okay, I might not be able to get it back up again.
Listen, maybe Travis doesn't want to be found. So I don't know. Go back and watch that scene. Let me know. Am I crazy? Who's Travis?
He's an important... Well, I did hear earlier, when we first get to the hospital, I heard Dr. Chang on the loudspeaker, which, considering your
Pierre.
Community watch, I was
or
like, Pierre. Oh, this feels very... Yeah, this feels very... Or Pierre Chang. Yeah, it could have been Marvin Candle nursing his own hand injury.
Yeah. Who knows when this took place, right? Travis. All right, so there we go. It's Christian. He's here. We'll get into it a little bit more, but, like, the thing that I want to pick apart here is, like, wow, really anticlimactic reveal. This is a very big deal. Jack's father is Claire's father, and we're kind of really casually dropping this information.
Yeah, especially for like a, what was it, probably like an Act 4 break or something. I think it's also tough to like have the reveal. The reveal vocally is at the end of the act break, but you pretty much know when you see Christian Shepherd there what the implications are, right? So it feels weird to have this entire scene, this entire argument between Christian and Lindsay, and then for him to reveal that he was his father. It could have just been as simple as the American's here, she walks in, he turns around, it's Christian Shepherd, cut to commercial.
It's odd. It's odd, for sure. And so like I think that is... A bit of a demerit for the episode for me is that, like, this is really big information, and I think that the way that they deliver it, they just didn't quite figure out, like, how to do it, you know? Like, I think, like, it... Especially, it's not just that piece of it, though that's an important piece, right? That, like, visually, immediately, you know. You know why he's here. He's her dad. Okay. And so then they try and play I'm her father as a big reveal, but like we're already ahead of the scene. But also that it's coming so late in the episode. Could we not have gotten here faster, right? Like, did we need the police officer scene? Could you have excised that completely? And the second flashback scene of the episode is Claire and Aunt Lindsay and the doctor saying there's a mysterious benefactor. And now this is flashback scene 3 instead of scene 4. And we've got a little more room to play with Christian Shepherd.
Yeah, I think that, or even like, I don't know. I know you like opening with the visceral, you know, car accident thing. But like you said, if it's less so about putting the blame on Claire and more so about this big Christian Shepherd reveal, I agree. I think they were trying to essentially do two things at once. And as a result, I think they sort of end up doing half, as Ron Swanson would say, they half-ass two things instead of whole-assing one thing.
Yeah. I do love that scene. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, I think I got the Travis thing going. So let's see if
let's hear it. Yeah.
Excuse me. The nurse said...
Wait, so this is Travis and asking for medical students?
Yeah, say, Mr. Travis, come to the... Is this like a Laurel and Yanni thing?
No, I heard Travis here. Let's listen one more time.
Okay.
Excuse me.
It sounds like this guy's like improvising. On the
it sounds like this guy saying, this is what I heard this time was... My name's Travis. Report to the ER. My name is Travis.
I definitely did not hear that. I heard paging Mr. Travis. Can you get the medical students?
All right. Tell us what you heard. What did Bill Murray whisper to Scarlett Johansson? All
maybe right, this so, is what he whispered. Mr. Yeah, Travis, Mr. the medical Travis. Students.
I'm Mr. Travis. Could you come to the ER? All right. So back at the fence. They're like, all right, Locke, you dick, you're gonna have to chop the tree.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, we're gonna watch right, you.
We're gonna climb the thing and you do the work. So he chops the tree, they set up the thing, they are literally going to climb over the pylon
and,
with the tree.
And Kate's like, this is my time, finally.
Yeah, down here, up here. I mean, Kate is great. Obviously, like, I think Kate in this episode it's a very strong Kate episode where she's never in the wrong. She's constantly, like, she's trying to get information. She's trying to move people along.
She's the one who comes up, as we heard in the clip, she's the one that comes up with the idea to go over instead of in or around the pylons, which ends up getting them into Dharmaville to begin with. I didn't think it meant to be the case, but I thought that the tree was probably more high up than I thought. So when I see, you know, Kate drop down out of the tree and she drops like 2 feet, I got like a little bit of a chuckle just thinking like, oh my God, it's a tense situation.
Well, let me ask you something. This sonar fence, the sonic fence, whatever, this is designed to keep out the monster. The monster is a smoke monster that flies around, can grow. Why doesn't the smoke monster just like fly over the fence?
Could it be? Yeah, I guess because
like obviously like they can climb over the fence and they're fine, right? So why can't the monster fly over the fence and it's fine?
Maybe it's more of like a diplomatic thing. Like, due to the treaty, you are not allowed to come in, and the monster's just very respectful.
I don't think that the monster signed shit. I don't think the monster signed anything.
Maybe the monster got tricked into signing something. It's like, hey, sign for this package. He's like, I love the package. No, damn it! I signed my rights away.
No way. No chance. No chance. This is just another one of the rules where Jacob's like, also, we've got a sonic fence that the Dharma people built, and you're not allowed to go through that because sonic stuff really messes with you. And the smoke monster's like, okay, well, then I'll just fly over it. And then Jacob's like, nope, new rule. You can't fly over it.
Also, I'm made of sound, so I don't know how that impairs me. Now I just have the image, though, of Stan Lee showing up as a courier being like, stanky monster, please sign for this.
Yeah, Jacob's like, you can't fly over it. It's a rule.
Yeah, it is a bit Calvin Ball-esque, right? Of like, no, you can't do that now. Can't new rule. That.
Can't do it. All right, so they go over and on the Amazon video, on the Amazon Prime of this episode at like around 28:20 is where you can see Mikhail is 1,000% breathing. Definitely 100% breathing. All right, so Claire is really mad. She's upset. She's talking with Sun. And then Sun, meanwhile, is like, hey, by the way, Desmond and Charlie, whatever's going on here, they're not on the same page. Look at that. And so they're fighting in the distance. And Claire is like, all right, I'm gonna go and get some answers. I've got some answers that I'm going to pursue. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, it's another flashback. Claire's at the tattoo parlor. You can, if you look closely at around, I think it's like 3129 on the Amazon Prime stream, you could see Mike Bloom in the background getting a tattoo.
Actually, I should have came right, much like Christian's reveal, that should have come much earlier in the episode. I was actually on an episode of Lost where I'm getting my tattoo and I'm like, God damn you, Brand Steele, why'd you make me have to come to Australia to get one?
It's Christian. He shows up, he just wants a cup of coffee and then he'll be gone for good. So let's go listen into this cup of coffee.
Here it is.
So it's true.
Yes, it's true.
How'd you find out about the accident?
A doctor friend here in Sydney told me. I got the call the minute your mother went into surgery.
Why did she tell me that you're dead?
Well, because I, no doubt, left her with so many wonderful memories. Look, we had a fling. I was back in Los Angeles and she told me that she was pregnant, that she was going to have the baby. Have you?
You didn't want to see me?
No, I came out a bunch of times when you were little. I stayed over, gave you toys, I sang to you.
Why'd you stop coming?
Because your aunt hates me. And your mother didn't like the fact that I had another family.
Why are you here now, then? And why'd you come? You could have just paid her bills from the States.
I came over because I wanted to help.
Help with what?
Claire, your mother is alive, but she's not really living.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means that now may be the time to look at other alternatives, other ways to relieve her pain. Now, it is illegal to turn off her machines, but I know of ways that can achieve the same effect without the legal consequences.
Just stop it. But you didn't come here to help me. You came here to try and fix a mistake that you made.
No, honey, that's not true.
You think that just paying her bills makes you noble or something? You come down here and you try and get me to kill her? You know, just go. Why don't you just go? Go back to your real family. Come on. You know, you might be my father, but I don't even know your name. And I want it to stay that way.
Claire, listen to me. Do not keep your mother alive for the wrong reasons. Now, there is hope and there is guilt, and believe me, I know the difference. I give up. It's great seeing you again.
Josh, never say Christian Dr. Kevorkian Shepherd does not have what it takes, because he came to Australia to tell Claire loopholes as to how she could kill her mother.
Yeah. Now, I know ways that would have different legal ramifications. You just grab her. You shake.
Exactly. You put a pillow over her face. You ever see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Because
you throw the water fountain out the window.
Don't tell me I won't. I'll do whatever it takes. I've got what it takes. I like Christian and Claire together. I wish that this worked out. I would love to have seen more of them together.
Exactly, in this context.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking as I was like even re-listening to this now in light of the conversation we had at the top of the pod, is like this idea of Like in season four, can you imagine that, like, instead of Cabin Fever, where we're getting the upteenth John Locke flashback, where we're watching him as a kid and all of this stuff, like, imagine getting, like, Claire as a kid and seeing a little bit of those times where, like, Christian was with her. Yeah. Where Christian, I think that,
I mean, I will say, like, to that point, when he says that he's saying to her and knowing what she talks about, Catch a Falling Star,
yeah,
and Raised by Another, like, that really hit me. And you could tell that really hits Emily Duravin as well.
Yeah. So, like, here's the thing too, and this is where I want to cut Lost a little bit of slack, because of course I want to cut Lost a little bit of slack, is that the writer's strike happens in season four, so who knows what the plans are, but I wonder if Claire is a character that gets a little bit underserved because of that. Is there an episode in season four, if they're still planning the basic shape of where they go, the shape of things to come in season four, like if they know where they're going, they just think they have more time to get there, are there designs on like telling the story of like Claire getting separated from the rest of the group through her perspective? Do they have like a plan that's like a Christian episode where, you know, they're showing him? Even that, like a Christian Shepherd flashback episode could have been cool at some point.
Yeah,
in time.
I mean, listen, I know that obviously the incident has its Jacob-centric stuff, but even doing an episode about Christian Shepherd, he doesn't need to touch everybody, but like basically maybe him leading that double life. Because the other thing as well is, so I guess now that we sort of know Christian's Australian tryst, so I guess maybe because he has a colleague in Australia, is that what he was doing here in the first place? Was like he was just sort of consorting with him and then happened to find his way in with Carol Littleton? Or was it that Carol Littleton was in California and had a one-night stand with Christian Shepherd?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it worked. Either way, he's logged a lot of time down under, what it sounds like.
Lots of airline miles. I mean, this is a really...
I would have liked to have seen it, man. I think it would have been good.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a very interesting Christian Shepherd episode, too, because I do not agree with Claire in her saying, like, you're being here to sort of, like, resolve your own guilt because you feel bad. I feel like that's a bit more of a wild accusation. On the other hand, it seems like one of the reasons why Christian is there, it's to very cold-heartedly tell her, like, look, I know I love you, love your mother, and who knows how many months have passed since she was initially comatose, but I think it's time to let her go.
Yeah, yeah. He loves to tell people when to let things go.
Exactly, but like, and maybe that's the thing. It's like, well, if my son can't do it, then damn it, maybe my daughter got this from
me.
Yeah,
maybe that'll be the way to go. So, I don't know. I like Christian a lot in this episode. I think, like, he's showing up. He's there, he's trying to make things right, and he's trying to, like, give his, like, sound medical advice. And, like, the thing is that, like, Claire's mom, you kind of, I think it's implied that, like, she comes back largely because of, like, Miraculous Island stuff.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say she, because, fun fact, we got a bit of a Penny situation here. The actress in that hospital bed, Josh, is not who appears in the end of season four.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I don't have any.
No, I just think it's funny that we get another Penny situation. I believe it's Arlene Newman Van Asperen plays comatose Carol Littleton, and Susan Dwerden plays non-comatose Carol Littleton. Maybe it was that she's like, well, now that I'm awake, give me a facelift, damn it. I've earned that much.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. All right. So back in reality. Oh, there goes gravity. There goes Claire getting mad at Desmond, being like, yeah, she's catching a bird.
She's following him into navigation of like, I want to see you carry out your task. What are you doing? You're acting super sus. Are you getting a bird on your own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in the engine room. And he's like, yeah, all right. So look, you want to know what happened? So you see those rocks over there? That's where Charlie fell and the bloody rocks got their revenge against the bloody rock god. And he smashed.
He's not the bloody rock and water god, to be fair.
He got smashed to ribbons against it, and that's where he died. And she's like, excuse me? He's like, yeah, what I'm trying to tell you is I have flashes before my eyes.
Before my eyes.
Where I can't stop seeing your boyfriend die. And I'm trying to save him. That's why I broke up the picnic.
And I know that we got a question from Fitzy that said, should Desmond have told Claire his secret? Honestly, don't see why he shouldn't. I honestly don't see why Desmond shouldn't tell everybody about it, because as he's proven in Flashes Before Your Eyes, like, he's kind of powerless to the eventuality of it all. And yeah. So if it's not going to fundamentally affect the end product, why not disclose it to anybody? You might have people who laugh in your face, but at the same time, like, at least you don't have to sneak around being super shady like you did this episode.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think, like, the other thing is, like, he could have just been like, look, you've been on this island before? You know this island, right? This island, crazy island, right? So let me tell you something that happens on this island. I can see the future.
Yeah.
I can see the future.
I couldn't see the future.
I could see the future, sister. You know, like, I could see it. I could see the future. And I keep seeing bad things happening to your guy. And you're just going to have to trust that that is what's going on.
But I can only see flashes. I can see a scooch of future.
And, you know, like, she's, like, into all of this stuff. So she's like, oh, no, I totally buy it. That makes sense.
Well, again, like, she saw a freaking psychic before she went onto the island. So I think she's totally open to believing in paranormal activity.
Yeah, so she buys it. I think that that makes some sense. So he tells her, I see the future. This is where your guide dies. We go back with Claire to Charlie. She's like, yeah, he told me everything. He's about the future, seeing the future. Back to the future. And she's like, you don't believe any of that, right? And she never really says.
I'd like to think so. I think it's also be sort of like a, well, if you believe it, I believe it. But yeah, this again speaks to something I said in Trisha Tanaka, where Charlie himself is such a skeptic that he automatically assumes everyone will approach something with as much skepticism as he does. When he tells Hurley, hey, Desmond told me I was going to die, Hurley's like, okay, yeah. And Claire reacts the same way. So I guess good on Charlie for at least maybe seeing other worldviews, that not everybody should walk into everything holding grains of salt.
Yeah, perhaps. Anyway, we get the final flashback of the episode.
Final Claire flashback scene, period.
Yeah, where Claire's gonna... So now, like, the goth hair is gone. R.I.P. goth hair. I loved it. And now it's Claire, you know, shortly before takeoff for 815. She's gonna see her mom one last time, and she is gonna bare her soul.
So how are you today, Mom? Did you have an okay night? There's something I have to tell you, Mum. Something I should have told you a long time ago. I'm pregnant. I'm giving it away. But it's for the best. I don't know how you did it. Raising me alone. That must have been so hard. And I was just awful. So horrible to you. I'm so sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry for all the awful things I said to you in the car. You weren't my mother, and I wish you were dead. It's all my fault. The accident. Everything. I'm so sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Okay.
It's sad.
I mean, Emily DeRavin.
She's just great in that scene. She's really great in that scene.
It seems like episodes like this and Maternity Leave were like Emily DeRavin, despite maybe the Claire writing, just like brings it home in a fantastic monologue, or I call this one the monologue. And she just does such a great job. And it's such.
There's some times where Emily DeRavin's, like, very meme-worthy, you know, like, stay away from my baby, okay, Charlie? Like, there's, like, you can go there, but, like, then, like, she brings it in a scene like this. She really, really does.
Yeah, and I think that this touches upon, as we talked about, a theme that maybe should have been focused on more if, again, they wanted to underline one specific theme outside of the Christian stuff, which is her guilt and blaming herself for what happened. And it's also coupled a bit with, you know, both of us are lucky to have not lost our parents. In fact, your parents are watching Lost, not losing them. But, you know, we certainly know people who have lost parents and have said, you know, like, I can't believe the last thing I told my dad or my mom was this. Whether it was something as inflammatory as Claire said, or even something innocuous, there is something about the finality of last words that can really reverberate with someone and make them hold on to it so much, which again informs why someone like Christian Shepherd, who faces death every day, can sort of like shrug it off. It's clearly something that Claire has kept with her for assumingly months and or years up to this point. I actually think that the flashback might take place in like the late 90s or something, according to Lostpedia. So she has held on to this for several years. And it just, I mean, it breaks my heart to think of the fact that you may never see someone you love so much again. And the last thing you said to them was so like emotionally driven and impetuous that like that is the last encounter you will have with someone. It quite literally haunts you, and you can feel that haunting in her monologue here.
The other thing too is like the the arc of growing up, and like her having been like in such a fight with her mom in that moment, and now like her mom being a single parent, and now finding herself on the verge of like, she was, you know, almost going to be a single parent. Now she's decided to put her, you know, to give her child to another set of parents.
And I'm assuming this is before the poor Stewart's MVPs got deprived of their child and the pen stopped working.
She's on her way to LA. We don't know,
true.
Like what the plan is there. But I think like just the way in which, I don't know, like the way in which, like, I think that it's not an uncommon thing is like you get older, and like the shit that you were so mad at your parents about before, like you start to be, oh no. Oh yeah. Well, I must have been awful. How did you do it? You know,
I mean, listen, as a new parent myself, I felt exactly that. And it happens with everybody of like, wow, I did not realize how parenting like can just be so tough to do, and how you do certain things that mimic your parents' style or the complete opposite. But like, no wonder you guys acted this way, depending on like how tough it can be to raise a child in certain circumstances. So yeah, it really does come from maturity and life experience, which is another reason why I'm also glad that we put this scene in here. Because otherwise, it would sort of kind of just be, you know, youthful, emotional, impetuous Claire. And while there were some interesting stuff between her and Christian, I wouldn't want to end Claire flashbacks on the last scene with her and Christian.
I agree.
You know, this feels like a nice send off to Claire flashbacks, this final scene.
As far as that goes, I agree. But the best Claire moment of the episode is not even anything that she says with her voice. It's what she says with her words and her writing, as Charlie has signed on for the carrier pigeon plot, and he recites the message that Claire has written on the bird, which I love. This is a great bit of writing. So let's listen in on it for the final sound of the episode.
To whom it may concern, we are survivors of Oceanic Flight 815. We have survived on this island for 80 days. We were 6 hours into the flight, and the pilot said we were off course and turned back towards Fiji. We had turbulence and crashed. I've been waiting here all this time, waiting for rescue that has not come. Know where we are. We only know you have not found us. We've done our best to live on this island. Some of us have come to accept we may never leave it. Not all of us have survived since the crash. But there is new life, too. And with it, there is hope. We are alive. Up on us. It's perfectly.
You know, I'm not giving up on you either, Charlie. It's gonna be okay. You're gonna be okay. through this together.
Desmond comes out with his rifle.
Oh man, top-notch Claire content.
Yeah,
hell of a writer this Claire Littleton.
She's, and it's a beautiful scene too. We'll get into some of the Jim Fell stuff later, but fun fact, that song that plays,
get into it now, I want to know. Let's talk about the music, because it's a great Chiquino score moment as well,
and it's a great Charlie Claire theme in particular, because we're gonna hear this little ditty pop back up during the end when Charlie and Claire both wake up. So it really is like a Charlie and Claire theme. There's also another one during the monologue in the second to last sound. The song that plays there actually plays when Charlie finishes his greatest hits list, which, you know, memorably had like The Day I Met You as part of his greatest hits. So there's a lot of Charlie and Claire thematic content that rings throughout this episode through the rest of season three and all the way forward to the end.
That's awesome. I really like this. I mean, like, the next scene is obviously like the football scene, and it's hysterical, because they get to the barracks and Jack starts running towards them. And you think Jack's like, yes, my friends, but no, he's just playing football with Mr. Friendly. And so they play it for a huge drama, right? With like the big strings and the suspense, and he spikes the football and you crash to Lost, and they play it like a very earnest, suspenseful Lost cliffhanger, which, not that it's not, Jack playing football with the others after everything we've seen him go through is kind of a terrifying
look.
Right.
You're like, oh, because we've seen in the past that the others are capable of brainwashing, or at least attempts to. So it's like, have they lobotomized him? You know, last time we saw him, he was like begrudgingly getting on the boat with Juliet, and he was smiling at her. So like, has he been fully ensconced within them? It's a little undone in retrospect by the fact that Dempsey Gainey and Matthew Fox are pretty damn funny with the football. Obviously, MC Gainey's throwing ability has been a hot topic amongst
Dallin Servo had asked, who taught Tom how to throw a football?
Nobody, okay? He's an older Josh Wiggler. Nobody taught him.
It was me. It was my dad.
But I think what also should be noticed is Matthew Fox's, in my opinion, terrifically derpy touchdown dance. Where
it's so funny.
He like does a Heisman, pauses for a hot second, like, oh, and then spikes the ball just so awkwardly. It's incredibly fun.
It's so funny. I would rate it below Got Any Milk, but as like a kind of like non sequitur ending, it's still really, really great. And I don't mean to yada yada past the Claire thing. But I bring it up because, like, yes, this episode has like an incredibly memorable ending, but I think the ending to the Claire piece and the penultimate scene of the episode is actually really, really great, and probably not getting remembered the way it ought to get remembered.
It's so pretty, and it even calls back to those montages we love on Lost, right? With pertinent parts of the letter, Sawyer's reading the Fountainhead. You know, Desmond sits in his tent when they say, "Some people have accepted, we may never leave." Son's cradling Aaron when they say there is new life, and with it there is hope. I love that Charlie's the one, and obviously Claire will follow up on this, but him saying, we are alive, please don't give up on us. Because I do like, between this and Trisha Tanaka, this arc of like, yeah, you have a death sentence, but that doesn't mean you can't make the most of what time you have left, which I think is an extremely inspiring thing in the wake of such like a depressing declaration of death. And it's a really sweet thing. And I think, you know, it's great that we have these Charlie Claire scenes instead of the ones that end freaking Live Together, Die Alone, where they're kissing after
all
he
right,
stumbled
okay,
out.
Okay, okay,
right,
calm down.
Riled
it's okay.
Up. I'm getting riled
it's okay.
Up.
It's okay. We're gonna be okay.
But it's a genuinely cute scene, and I think that also I think Claire's words to Charlie are also so sweet and self-affirming.
I won't give up on you, Charlie, until you're dead, at which point I will completely forget about you.
Yeah, that's an asterisk, but we won't speak on that yet. Not until the body's cold.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some bodies. Let's give some MVPs and LVPs this week. I've got three MVPs. You've got three LVPs. I'll just kick it off. Claire Littleton, come on down. Really great Emily DeRavin performance. The writing is really, really, really great in terms of that final speech. And also just impressive vision. Right.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of like vision of an idea, but like literally she sees like the glint of metal. She's like, we could use that. That's a good, we could put a thing. They're being tracked.
Yeah. I mean, I think she has a lot of great stuff here. So obviously she's also really on to Desmond and Charlie. Again, it doesn't take an Inspector Clouseau to be, or Russo to be able to see through it, but like she calls them out on it. She gets the information out of Desmond and a bird to boot. And she ultimately succeeded in her plan where Bernard couldn't. So I think she gets a point there in my book as well. I'll throw one, my other one onto Kate. We talked about this before, so I won't repeat the point, but very good episode for Kate. She has some nice personal moments with Rousseau. She comes up with the plan to go over the pylons to get them into Dharmaville. So very good stuff for Kate.
Yeah, I agree. I'm giving Kate a point as well for those reasons. And then my final MVP point, I'm going to split it. We've done this before.
We love splitting it up between the Kwans.
Yeah, I'm giving the Kwans a half and half, which is actually going to make them whole. They've been lingering with like a half point each for the last little while because we did this once upon a time. So I'm giving them 1 point split across the two, which is going to boost the two of them to, I believe, Jin has 9 points, Sun has 8 points all time as a result of this this point five for both of them. So cheating a little bit, but it's been bothering me, so I'm fixing it.
Yeah,
they're both great in this, right? Like they're like, yeah, Claire, whatever you want to do, it's your day. Let's seize the day. Let's do this.
Yeah, if I had to pick between the two, maybe I would slight Sun more because she's also serving as like someone for Claire to chat with. But Jin is also the practical one. Like he's the one who set up the trap.
Oh, they're both so on board. They're so on board. They're like, yeah, for sure. Let's
so
do this.
So Kwan board.
Yeah, they're really into it. All right, LVP time. Who do you got?
I got 3 points and two of them are going to Johnny Locke. And I don't want any like, but Mike, John Locke wasn't bad. He was bad this episode, folks. I know we love John Locke, but he was not very good in this episode. He killed a person. He lied about stuff. He got caught red-handed. He's going to have a better episode next time. It's okay.
Is he?
I don't know. He has some fun scenes with Ben.
I think John Locke in the present, much like he's about to be in the past, is in free fall because I'm throwing an LVP on Locke as well. So that's negative three for Locke right now, which I think has him at not just a negative four for the season, but overall. A negative four. And I think he's going to plummet further next week would be my bet. Maybe not a lot because performance stuff might like even things out. I know that's been an equalizer in the past, but I can't imagine Locke doesn't leave next week without an LVP. So that's going to push him. If he gets to negative five, he's starting to get in rarefied air.
Oh, boy. Well, here's my question. Will Charlie be higher than Locke at the end of season three?
By the end of season three, I expect yes, I do. I do think so. I think Locke is, Locke will ultimately, I expect, end in the positives. But probably low single digits would be my bet. And not by the end of season three. I think season three, he's in the negatives would be my guess for John Locke, just thinking about the arc. So I'll give Locke a negative for the reasons you state. And then I'll give my second negative. I'm going to give it to Aunt Lindsay. I think shower shaming Claire, like she's just been through a traumatic incident. Be cool, man. Like let Claire live. Aunt Lindsay, you get a demerit.
And I'm going to give my final LVP point. I sort of showed my hand during sound number six, but I'm going to give it to Christian here. Look, he does do a great thing in that if apparently in this medical universe in Australia, they need, you know, money from a private donor to keep her essentially on life support. Good on him for doing that. But at the same time, I don't think it's a great look for him to be like, hey, Claire, I'm your dad. You could kill your mom. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Again, I think he has maybe not the best intentions, but I think the most pragmatic intentions.
He needed a few more coffee dates before he was able to
sell
that one.
Again, as Claire said, at least give your name. Yeah. Apparently. Yeah. I think a little too quick there on the button. So I'm going to dock Christian. I was just looking at the total. does Christian Shepherd really only have like a negative two at this point?
Yeah, because sometimes we give him a thumbs up. You
know, right, because he does give like I think him handling the Jack Christian's stuff like, was
yeah,
okay.
He's like a high variance character. Sometimes he's up, sometimes he's down. Not unlike John Locke, actually.
Yeah, maybe I was confusing him with next week when we get into a perennial bad daddy and Anthony Cooper, who's going to be returned.
Tony Coops is going to be back in the mix next week.
I would not
week.
Be surprised if he either ties or overtakes Pickett, who's at negative 10 right now.
Yeah, so Pickett is our leader in the LVPs right now at negative 10. I expect he will either be tied or surpassed. So enjoy it while you got it, Danny. You're in the negative 10 leader position right now, but I think Tony Coops is coming for you. 4.2 stars, like I said before, 3.2 for me, which is the same score I gave The Whole Truth. A good episode of Lost. I really enjoyed rewatching it, revisiting it. There were certain things in this episode that I appreciated more this time around that maybe I hadn't even really appreciated at all previously. Mm-hmm. Really, really fun ending. The football scene is just great. And a really good setup for where we're going next week. And like giving you that week in the real time was like, shit, did they get to Jack? Was a really, cool one to kind of chew on for a little while. So yeah, I really like Paravion. I think when I'm looking at the board here,
the board.
Yeah. When I'm looking at the board here, of all the episodes so far, I have Paravion, exactly where I think it ought to be. Like I have it higher than Every Man for Himself, Glass Ballerina, Further Instructions, and yes, even Stranger in a Strange Land, which I know is a shocker because I love that episode. So I think it is appropriately placed for me that I have it higher than those episodes. I'd rather watch this one than any of those again.
Yeah. So I'm going to join you on the 3.2 train. For me, I was really trying to look at like, where does this episode compare to other season 3 episodes for me, which is what I've been doing as of late. I've been really going back and forth as to like, do I enjoy Every Man for Himself more or less than Paravion? And honestly, they're sort of like on the same level for me. And then I do think, you know, there's a really interesting plot that's done between the Sonic Fences in this and between Sawyer getting conned and all the emotional stuff there in Every Man for Himself. The flashbacks, there's some interesting stuff, though I think the flashbacks are stronger in Paravion than Everything for Himself. But Paravion also has, I don't know, there's some messiness there. And I do feel like, you know, I think looking at this through the lens of like, this is the last real Claire highlight, it does give me a bit of bitterness, admittedly. So I put it actually giving it the same score, which is again in like the good episode of Lost tier. I think that there are better episodes than this one, but I think there is certainly great stuff to pick out. Obviously, you talked about the ending. We talk about Mikhail's quote-unquote death. Like, there is some fun to be had, and Emily Duravin brings some great performances. But I can totally understand why, especially in the middle of the season, this is one of the more forgotten episodes.
For sure. 3.1 from the audience gives it a 3.18 between all of our scores.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of, like, it basically ranges between, like, high twos and a few high threes as well. So I think we're all sort of in the same boat
of,
like,
I think so.
Good to, like, if you have a good emotional resonance with this, I can understand you wanting to
maybe
put it
being
higher.
A little higher. But yeah, I think, like, uncontroversial, like, solid, like, good middle-of-the-road Lost episode. You know, if you forget this one, I understand. If you don't, like, then it resonated with you in a different way. I think, final Claire send-off, I wish that we'd had more from her. Obviously not the end of her as a character, but the end of her as like sort of like a focus in this way. You know, I wish that we'd gotten more along the way. And I think even here, even though I like a lot of the flashback material, I think it's a little wobbly in certain points. So
the Claire flashback episodes, since we're officially done but with those, go in order of score: Raised by Another, Maternity Leave, Paravion. Do you agree with that? Is that how you would rank the Claire flashback episodes?
Yeah, off the top of my head, that feels right to me.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that Maternity Leave might get like a smidge more credit because of the unique method of storytelling, mm-hmm. and there are some stuff there. But I do feel like Raised by Another also had like a killer ending as well with the Ethan stuff. So
yeah.
I think it makes sense. They're not huge steps down. It goes from, I believe, a 3.586 to a 3.385 to what is Paravion, like a 3.21. So it's not like huge scales down like we've seen with other characters' flashback episodes, but I do find it interesting. Maybe as we sort of conclude characters' flashback episodes, we could sort of do like a roundup of how their flashback episodes rank to sort of see if there's a pattern as to how they do.
Wow, I'm like sad that it's already over for Claire. I know we're only halfway through our Lost rewatch, but the fact that we're already done with a certain character's flashbacks and they're not even dead. Like this, I don't know, it's starting to feel real.
Yeah, it feels conclusive from a certain perspective. Even though, like you said, we have a lot of stuff to get through.
A lot of life to live, hopefully.
we gotta seize the pod. Every single pod is it. We have to do it like it's our last.
Every pod counts. All right. So 3.2 is across the board. I stand corrected. 3.2 is across the board for Par Avion, which gives it a 3.21 technically. So it is exciting because we're about to
it's number eight, which is a great loss number.
We're about to see what happened to John Locke. We're about to see John Locke drop. The man from Tallahassee coming your way just in time for a little bit shy of Halloween. So that's on the way. We're going to get some answers for how did Locke wind up in the wheelchair. Get your feedback in down the hatch at postshowrecaps.com. You can also talk to us on the Discord. As we mentioned, if you become a patron of Post Show Recaps, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Help get us towards the Wiggle Bloom. Mm-hmm. Mike and I want to do that podcast. So help us out. And that'll be how you can listen to it is if you're a member of the Patreon. So patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Mike Bloom, how's Disco going?
Disco had a really, really fun season three premiere. It was very different. It was smaller. It was simpler. It was funny. And Jessica Lace and I got into it all as we're introduced to the world of the 3100s and the prospects that could be coming. And of course, we're just getting started to use a Post-Show Recaps parlance. Episode 2 should have already dropped on CBS All Access by the time this podcast is out. And so it'll only be a short amount of time until Jess and I get together to talk through that. And also, I spoke about our good friend Chappelle before. Josh, you and I and him got together to conclude the epic first ever two-part Brand Steel, Australian Survivor, and the game. We got to see the post-merge take place as 12 turn to one, the 12 remaining Avengers or MCU characters battling it out in a game of Survivor. Again, if you are able to get to the Wiggle Bloom milestone, there is more where that came from. But that was a very, very fun time getting together. And also on the side, explaining certain things to Chappelle, who has never seen Australian Survivor before.
I just have MCU Gainey in my head, but maybe that's because he's playing football at the end of this episode.
Yeah, maybe MCU Gainey in Endgame is like, here, catch the gauntlet, and just completely flubs it.
A million things happening on Post Show Recaps right now. The Pen 15 podcast is getting ready to go into the finale, and then we'll have one more bonus show there. Fear the Walking Dead World Beyond with Jess and Chappelle. Avatar, hang in there. The rewatch, it's happening. On the patron feed, a lot going on with the movies. We got the movies. Post Show Recaps Theater, community building, watching with Wiggler. So it's a heck of a time to be in on the Post Show Recaps game. The Mandalorian coverage is starting up.
It is crazy to me that we are soon going to be ending 2020 at a time where there are Star Trek and Star Wars TV shows on air at the same time.
Yeah, and getting coverage on Post Show Recap. So check all that out. Listen to the podcasts that suit you. We know that Down the Hatch suits you real well. So we'll be back next week with the man from Tallahassee, the Magic Box. I know Ben Martell's looking forward to that. Magic Box loves the metaphor. We'll get into the Magic Box of it all next week on Down the Hatch. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye.
Excuse me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.